I don't think that's very likely to tell you the truth. And
all I said was Shrek. I never said Shrek was bad or good.
Help me! Help me, please!
What's going on there?
Since I've been your president, I want to remind you, we have been through a recession.
This is Gay News. Gays around the world and around the nation. Homosexuals making an impact. Gay news. Tonight, today, here, now. Gay. Homosexuality documented here on the Gay Network. Gay, 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 gay. A Gay Network. Thank you and welcome to the Gay Network. Now listen to this. We've got a couple of stories and we thought we'd give it a little bit of a luxuriant intro like that there thing that we've done there, see? And these stories are very, very tricky. These are very, very tricky. Now we were going to start off with some more about the campaign, but whatever. They're going to be here tomorrow. Don't worry about it. They'll be running their big fat mouths tomorrow and on Sunday and on Monday and on Tuesday. And then somebody's going to lose and someone's going to say, yep, we're moving ahead, going to North Carolina, and then get our ass kicked in Denver. Hey! Three guesses who that's going to be. Anyway, these are very tricky stories. Very tricky stories. Our number is 1-800-449-8255. I've got two gay stories, gay-related stories. And when I say gay-related, I'm not trying to be a smartass. I mean, these are stories that affect the gay community and how we view homosexuality in this country. Now, one of them is an American Psychiatric Association panel that was scheduled on religion and homosexuality. They were going to do a workshop at their annual conference, the American Psychiatric Association. And the workshop was slated to discuss how religion can impact or affect homosexuality, to wit, can you change someone's orientation through religion? Now, the symposium was called Homosexuality and Therapy, the Religious Dimension. Now, it was slated for Monday. It was going to be at the Washington Convention Center. However, when the star panelist, who is an openly gay New Hampshire Episcopal bishop named V. Gene Robinson, dropped out last week, plans for the symposium collapsed amid an avalanche of criticism from gays. David Skosta, who's a former APA president and a gay psychiatrist in charge of assembling the panel, he said, "We wanted to talk rationally, calmly, and respectfully to each other, but the external forces made it into a divisive debate it never intended to be." In other words, what gay activists were protesting was the notion that anyone would even remotely discuss the idea that you can change someone's sexual orientation with religion. And you know what that is. If we talk about changing somebody's sexual orientation with religion, we're talking about one of them gay camps, you know, where you take the gay and you take them over to the camp and you indoctrinate him with the Bible and with Jesus or whatever it is that they use, and he comes out straight and he's in love with women, their breasts, their butts, their legs, and their cooking. And then you've got a guy who sounds like this: "I love women with their breasts." That's what you got. In other words, no, you can't do it. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I guess there's someone who's going to say, "Mr. Henry, the science is not yet concluded on this. Maybe you can make me into a rabbit, too. How can you?" Very funny. Very good. Touché. All right, so they were angry, and they shut it down, basically. The people who were campaigning against this, the activists involved in getting this thing, turned away. They called it junk science. In fact, there was an article in something called the Gay City News. Their website said that psychiatrists allow ex-gay end run.
That's pretty funny.
Maybe to you it is, bud, but I'm trying to be adult about this.
Gay end run. Yeah, I'll bet.
Maybe it is to you. I'm trying to be adult about this. A Wednesday piece in the Washington Blade.
The Washington Blade.
Will you get out of here and get me another one? Go get me a Carl's Jr., man.
You want a double Weston bacon cheeseburger?
I want a Coke. That's all I want. A Wednesday piece in the Washington Blade, a gay newspaper, said the panel could legitimize homophobic views. Conservatives, particularly focus on the family, were going to use this event to draw credibility to the so-called reparative therapy movement, which is this Jesus-freak kind of thing where you take the gay and you get Jesus into them. Okay. Now, why did you say, Phil, at the beginning this is a very tricky story? Well, I'm going to go to one more, and then I'm going to tell you why it's tricky. This is another story, and this also has to do with gay people outraged at a discussion using their numbers to keep this from happening. And this is at Smith College. Dozens of gay and lesbian activists at Smith College climbed in through windows and stormed a podium shortly after a conservative author named Ryan Sorba took the stage to speak to students there. He was invited by the Smith College Republicans to speak about his forthcoming book, The Born Gay Hoax. Now, the club arranged for police and campus security to be present in case anyone attempted to disrupt the speech, but disrupt it they did. There was a video shot by a conservative Massachusetts political group, Mass Resistance, showing officers standing by, according to this article, as students chanted, screamed, banged pots and pans, and eventually, you know, got this guy. They had to tell the guy to get off the stage. They said it would be safe for him if he left the stage. That's what they told this guy, Sorba. And then the next day, the president of the university said the Smith community was very disappointed that some members of our community chose not to uphold our commitment to free speech. All right. And by the way, we would like to play for you at this time the sound of the gay students storming through the windows. Thousands of lesbians stormed through windows at Smith College. This is the sound of the lesbian in action. And who is our enemy? Goldstein. Goldstein. Yes, Oceania is our country. That's pretty heavy, you know. I just got inspiration, man. So anyway, these were thousands of lesbians that were storming the stage. Something, I'm sorry if you're lesbian, I say this with the greatest of respect, but there's something very frightening about the sound of thousands of lesbians storming a stage, and that probably makes you happy, doesn't it? All right, why did I say at the beginning it's a tricky story? Here's why. When scientists get together, the American Psychiatric Association, no one, I don't think anyone with half a brain can quibble with that august body. These are men and women with a scientific background who are curious, as all scientists must be, about every kind of possibility and permutation, what affects what, how are things done, how are things created, what is the nature of life. This is what a scientist does. And when people, even gay activists who consider themselves to be progressive, I don't doubt that there's a one that doesn't think that they're progressive, when they exert pressure to have certain things censored, even if it's wrong, man, even if we know that reparative therapy is jive, even if we know it's junk science, consider the people who are investigating this. They are scientists. There's no political agenda there. There's no lifestyle agenda. There's no religious agenda of the American Psychiatric Association. It was the American Psychiatric Association in the first place that took homosexuality off the list of aberrant mental diseases. These were the people who put the stamp, if you will, of approval on homosexuality as a normal, albeit rare, but normal, comparatively speaking, normal state of being. It was not a disease. It was the APA that led the way in that. And when you disrupt a scientific meeting, I hate to tell you this, but you begin to act like the very religious fanatics of the Middle Ages and down through the many years that we've lived, who were activists against scientific exploration and scientific questioning, the ones that didn't want Galileo trying to figure out what made this and what made that, the ones that didn't want Isaac Newton and all of the others, and even Einstein, the ones who didn't want evolution taught in the schools, the religious fanatics who are constantly at odds with science, these gay people in Washington, the ones that didn't want that seminar to take place, are acting just like those people. And that, my friends, is dangerous. This is our country. This is Gayland. These are our people. Strong. Devout. Oh, God, are they queer. Yes, these are our people. And who is our enemy? Who is he that tries to hold us back? Who is he that tries to keep us from being who we are? From being the people that we know we must be? Say it with me. Say it loudly. Say his name. Elmer Fudd.
If waterboarding is constitutional, is a massive hedge.
It's been a reality, I suppose, from time to time that presidents don't like this or that. Bush, you know, with that whole trip that he wanted to have a gay ban on marriage amendment, I gotta be honest with you, and I still believe this, and I'm gonna believe this to my dying day. I think he came out in favor of a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage to keep all the religious nuts, keep their mouths shut, because some of those people are really out there. Talk about mental health issues. Wait till you hear, as a matter of fact, they've got a new ad out. National Organization of Marriage. I'm going to say the following. Number one, this is highly inflammatory rhetoric. Number two, if someone were to pick up a gun and go out and shoot an abortion doctor after hearing this, I would still say it's a mental health issue with that individual. Do you understand the point? I know you guys understand, but there may be some casual listeners who don't quite get where I'm coming from, because on the one hand, I think Obama's a good president. On the other hand, I think George Bush was a courageous president. And some people are just, man, they're in some kind of a warp drive right now trying to figure that one out. Why? You see, what do you think of Glenn Beck? I think he's a hell of a golfer. Now, according to Politico's Ben Smith, the National Organization for Marriage is doling out $1.5 million to air this spot.
There's a storm gathering.
The clouds are dark. And the winds are strong.
And really? I am afraid.
Some who advocate for same-sex marriage have taken the issue far beyond same-sex couples.
They want to bring the issue into my life.
My freedom will be taken away.
I'm a California doctor who must choose between my faith and my job.
I'm part of a New Jersey church group punished by the government because we can't support same-sex marriage.
I'm a Massachusetts parent, helplessly watching public schools teach my son that gay marriage is okay.
But some who advocate for same-sex marriage have not been content with same-sex couples living as they wish.
Those advocates want to change the way I live.
I will have no choice.
The storm is coming.
But we have hope. A rainbow coalition of people of every creed and color are coming together in love to protect them.
This is the Bill Henry Show. This is the Bill Henry Show.
From Washington, D.C., this is National Socialist Radio.
Later on National Socialist Radio, the Larry Klink Show, with special guest Arianna Huffington und der Führer Adolf Hitler.
Support reading with Joseph Goebbels. Anti-Semitic poetry and the poetry reading there at the coffee house there in the Lindestrasse later on this afternoon. Beautiful day today in Berlin. Temperatures around 82 degrees. Everything is just good, you know. And now here, the Larry Klink Show. Welcome, good evening here, Larry Klink. I got Arianna Huffington with me. Long time, huh?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I haven't been on your program, I think.
Couple of years, anyway.
Couple of years, yeah.
And also we have the Führer, Adolf Hitler. Mein Führer, how are you?
Yeah, good, Larry. Good, good. Everything good.
Say, listen, I'm going to ask you a question, because I know that Tom Cruise, you know, has the movie coming out.
Yeah.
And it's about that Staffelberg scumbag, you know, the guy that tried to blow you up. What What happened there?
Yeah, well, I didn't know that either.
Oh, you didn't hear about that?
No.
Well, I was having a meeting there, you know, in the Wolfslayer.
Now, the Wolfslayer is, that's not...
No, the Wolfslayer is in Poland, which is where the war, you know, the war headquarter.
Right.
So anyway, I'm there and talking, blah, blah, blah. And the damn thing just blew up. Blew my pants right off.
You're kidding me. That's funny.
Well, yeah, it sounds funny now, you know, but my pants just came off.
It blew your pants off?
Blew my pants clean off. I'm walking around Stagenau, the Führer, the leader of Germany, with it all hanging out, you know, and my ass hanging in the breeze. So I took these guys, I hung them by piano wire, you know.
But anyway, I wanted to tell you that the movie coming out with Cruise now, you know, it's been held up.
Well, I think that's a good idea. What?
Well, apparently they're not going to come out with the movie right now because the Scientology thing and that freak.
Oh, yeah, it's no good. I don't know about that. Was it Xenu or something?
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. I looked into it one time. I wanted to join, you know, after my husband and I divorced because he had all the money, you know. And I heard that but there's a lot of Jews, you know.
Yeah, well, I want to get to that, Aliana, because Aliana Huffington, my guest here on the Larry Klink Show here on National Socialist Radio. You're beautiful because you call this guy Hagee an anti-Semite. He's not really.
No, it's not, but I put it in the post, you know, and it gets people pissed off, and that way they're going to vote for the black...
Now, I see. What is about... I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead, mein Führer.
No, okay. But what's the point? You want to have this Negro who is going to be president. What's the point? You're going to make him president?
No, it's not about president, but so that the agenda, the National Socialist agenda, can be, you know, promoted through.
Oh, so you use the Negro for...
He's almost like a puppet.
Yeah, Larry has it. He's a puppet.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, we pull the strings and everything. But, no, I don't know anything about this Hagee guy, but I thought, you know, I can get a little dig in on the Jews there. I use that. And it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
All right, I want to get to something else here on National Socialist Radio here at Larry Klink. And by the way, we're going to take your calls here. The number on the Larry Klink Show is 1-800-FASCIST-RUNNING-DOG. That's 1-800-NATIONAL-SOCIALIST-SCUMBAG. That's 1-800-MEIN-FUHRER. Jawohl. What do you think of this Domnagic thing, you know?
Oh, that's the guy that was Ivan the Terrible, right?
Yeah, in America, they want to get rid of him, you know. But this guy is not Ivan the Terrible. It turns out he's just an old guy.
Well, that's so wrong, you know. All he did was kill Jews. And
yeah, I don't get it either.
They've got a hang-up about that in the United States. You know, they don't dig it. So,
what, killing Jews?
Yeah, no, they don't kill Jews there. We do.
Yeah, we do, but they don't. And that's, they see the Jew, Roosevelt, all that. Or whoever they got right now.
Yeah. So what happened was, anyway, this guy, Domjanjic or some jazz, he's working in a car mill or something, and then somebody said, oh, you're the guy that put that blowtorch up my rear end over there at Treblinka. And,
oh, okay. So they are persecuting him.
Yeah. Persecute a good Nazi. Okay. So anyway, they're going to run his ass out of town one of these days.
Well, you know, they always say they're going to do that, but they never do, you know.
Well, what about the guy... Eichmann, you know.
Oh, he was an idiot. Are you kidding me with that guy?
Eichmann was a jackball because he let the Jews follow him home.
Yeah, well, you have to hand it to the Jews the way they followed the guy and they nabbed him and gave him the chloroform.
They'd never do that to me.
You don't think so?
Never do. No, I'm the Führer of Germany. I'm Hitler. They're not going to do that to me. I'll blow my freaking brains out before I let those guys put their hands on me, I'll tell you that.
All right, let's get your phone calls here. In Berlin, Joseph, go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, hey, what's up, Larry?
How are you doing?
Not too much. Mein Führer, Sieg Heil.
Yeah, Sieg Heil.
Mein Führer, so you okay after the bomb went off, huh?
Yeah, it blew my pants off. You know, I look like a jackass walking around. But I got the guy.
Now who's the guy that done it?
Well, we got it nailed down to a couple guys. The guy with a patch on his eye.
Captain Crunch? I'm just kidding.
Captain Crunch, that's funny.
Well, the Captain Crunch, does he see Falcon with him?
No, listen.
Captain Crunch or the Punch?
It's not Captain Crunch, you jackass. It's the guy, Stauffenberg, that's the guy.
All right, so that's a Prince Stauffenberg, right?
Yeah, some gay blade.
Oh, yeah? Hey, Larry, when you coming to Munich, you gonna do a personal appearance or something? I got all your CDs and everything.
Yeah, but we're going to be in Munich, Oh, God, I got such a busy schedule here. You know, now that the bombing has begun, you know, they're running my ass all over the country.
Yeah, that's it. I've got to stop that, though. You know, like, we don't like them bomb your ass.
Yeah, I don't like it either, you know?
Well, but I'll be in Munich next Tuesday at 3 p.m. there at Schechter's. It's a delicatessen.
Yeah, okay, cool.
All right, let's go to another phone call here. Bavaria, and this is Mindy. Go ahead, Mindy. You're on the Lake Link.
I want to ask Manchua the question about, I understand you've got a marvelous salsa recipe.
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. You're kidding. You cook? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Can you give us a...
Well, the salsa recipe that I've got, we're out of time?
We are out of time. This is National Socialism. I'll tell you, we'll come back and talk about that.
Yeah, I'll be good.
Ayanna Huffington, my guest here, along with Adolf Hitler. We'll be back at the Phil Hendley Show, where truth is our bitch. So anyway, Adolf.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. I want to bring on the line here tonight a special guest that we've been telling you about here the last week, Waleed Shoaibat. And Mr. Shoaibat is a native of the Middle East, the Palestinian territories. He was born in Bethlehem. He comes from a long line of very prominent Palestinians and was a member himself as a young man of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And according to his own press release, was a man who participated in, quote, acts of terror and violence against Israel. He was imprisoned in Jerusalem Central Prison. He was released, continued this life of terrorist activity in the Middle East, came to the United States, was also very active in anti-Israeli campaigns and activities. He was a counselor for an Arab student organization at Loop College in Chicago, and eventually came to embrace a belief that he had been misled, had been miseducated, believed that there were larger truths to embrace. And as a matter of fact, his I guess you could say his conversion to becoming a supporter of Israel came about when he was challenged to convert his own wife to Islam. And after reading the Jewish Bible, he realized that everything he'd been taught about Jews was, quote, a lie. So let me bring you on, Mr. Shoaibat. Thanks for being with us, sir, this evening. And I hope I've accurately given a thumbnail of your early life leading up to this point in time.
That was perfect. Thank you for having me.
You got it. And let me ask you, how old are you, sir?
I was born in 1960, so that makes me, 47.
So you've been down the road of life a little bit, and you've seen an awful lot of this world.
I've seen it all.
Yeah. And you've probably heard it all, haven't you? You've probably been in every kind of debate, haven't you?
Hundreds of debates. You know, the truth is so easy to see, you know, but yet to have a whole world of media, especially television, that tries to cover the truth and tries to, you know, avoid calling a spade a spade.
I wonder why that is. I wonder why that is. Why is it that we do these twists and these flips and these contortions to try to see the other side so desperately, I guess, to try to be fair so desperately that we wind up blinding ourselves, perhaps, huh?
Well, apparently under communism, we understood what the enemy was. Nazism, we understood what the enemy was. With this system, it cloaks itself in a religion, and it's difficult to address it. If you say the word Islam, you've offended somebody. You've offended 1.2 billion Muslims. You can't make movies. You can't make documentaries. Anything you do is a Zionist conspiracy. It doesn't matter what you do. Your critics are after you. You know, like I always used to say, when I used to lie when I was a terrorist, you guys believed us. When finally I decided to tell the truth, we've been nicknamed all kinds of things. You know, they call us Islamophobes, xenophobes, hate mongers, racists, and all these kind of things, just because we critique some aspects of Islamic religion. So that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a dilemma because it's a religious issue, yet Americans, I think, need to understand that Islam as a religion, it's not merely a religion. It is a constitutional government. It is a code of law called Sharia. And in every Muslim country, we have certain aspects of Sharia law that is followed in the Middle East and in every Muslim country. So until we get a grip with this and deal with this code of law as something that we are struggling against because it doesn't match our code of law, that we need to begin to understand that Islam basically is a constitution. It is not a religion. So,
and by the way, I just wanted to mention that you're an American citizen, correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let me before we get to it's a fascinating story, and certainly what you have to say is so important. I want to find out at the very beginning how it all changed for you. Now, we know, I gave everybody a thumbnail, as I mentioned, you come from a prominent family of Palestinians, many of them active against Israel, active against the British during the days of the Mandate. And now you are a young man, you're in the PLO, and you're fomenting against Israel in the United States and so on. What happened to you? I know that it had something to do with this trying to convert your wife to Islam. Tell me what happened to you internally, what happened to you spiritually and politically in these days that this took place.
The first thing I had to get a grip with is the Holocaust issue, because in the Middle East, especially in the Palestinian areas, there is no education regarding accepting the Holocaust as a historic reality. The Holocaust is a fabrication. In fact, you can see the Prime Minister of the Palestinian people, Mahmoud Abbas, still wrote the Holocaust as a fabrication in his education. In his graduation, in his theses, the Holocaust was a fabrication. So dealing with the Holocaust from the beginning of my family connection to Hajj Amin al-Husseini, who was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who was known to have met with Adolf Hitler on the eve of the Final Solution to destroy the Jewish people. So most Westerners don't understand that there is a connect between the Muslim world, in which two divisions of the eight divisions of the Nazi war machine were Muslim fundamentalists, and Hajj Amin was a regular guest at my grandfather's house. So from the beginning of time, we've denied the history in the United States in 1993 as I began to research my inner soul and began to buy footage on the Holocaust and watch these things and began to educate myself to realize that this thing was not a fabrication, this thing was real. So why was I lied to? Who lied to me? Why? And many questions I began to ask myself. I began to look at, let's say, Jewish arts, history, that kind of thing. I began to look at Jewish music. I began to see in Israel that the Israelis never have the kinds of songs that we have. Even our national anthem, the Palestinian national anthem, says, Palestine is my home, Palestine is my vengeance. Why vengeance? I took a trip in 1991, and I began to ask many questions. I began to, drive around all the streets in Ramallah and all these areas, and I began to see graffiti all over the walls, and I began to ask my uncle, I cannot find a square meter that doesn't have graffiti. And we're not talking about gang graffiti. The graffiti would say, we knock on the gates of heaven with the skulls of Jews. I began to ask the question, why is the only way for us to enter paradise is by dying or killing Jews and going to heaven? Because the element of salvation in Islam is assured by the martyr's death and by the spilling of his own blood. In fact, many members of my family died in their way to try to kill Jews and Israelis. And I began to see this false and faulty salvation message that was basically offered in Islamdom that I began to deal with. So from the historical perspective, from the spiritual perspective, arts and everything else, my life began to go upside down as I began to research these things.
I want to mention to people, sir, that we are talking to Waleed Shoaibat, and he is an author. He is an expert on Islamic terrorists and a former, as you're hearing his story, a former member of the PLO, self-described terrorist. And we're hearing his story, his spiritual transformation and political transformation from being this individual to a man who today openly advocates on behalf of Israel and is, in fact, an American citizen. So go ahead. So this change now takes place. Just one little question before you move on. Why were you different from any of your compatriots? What made you different? What made you see things they couldn't see and maybe still can't see?
Well, I must say that my mother was an American. Her grandfather was a mayor in Eureka, California. He was a friend. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather was friends with Winston Churchill. I knew very little about my American connection. My mother would sleep in a separate room from my father, and sometimes I'd steal her cigarettes and I would share things with her, and she would share things with me privately, and she was reading the Bible, and I was asking her all kinds of questions. She would take me to places like the Israel Museum and things like this. She wasn't able to really tell me how she wants me to live, because she visited the Middle East in the late 50s, in 1960 exactly, and she was not allowed to leave from the Middle East for 35 years. Most Americans do not know that there isn't a single Muslim country that is signatory to the Hague Convention, which means if a woman decides to marry a Muslim and he decides to take her to his country, whether it's Iran, Lebanon, Palestine, Jordan, there's nothing she can do about it. So she was stuck in the Middle East for 35 years. And probing into my mother's mind, I've discovered that she has no problems with Israel. She has a different spiritual understanding. She was a Christian, basically. She shared some of these things with me. Those things resonated. They remained in my mind for the rest of my life. And then when I began to probe into these things, I discovered that my mother was right about many things. So I rescued her in 1994 when I became Christian in 1993, brought her back to her country. In fact, her story is the one that should be told. Because everywhere I go speak, there's always these stories of, you know, American women marrying Muslims and not being able to come back to their countries. It's an epidemic that nobody wants to address.
I took you off track a little bit, Mr. Shoabot. So tell us, now this transformation has taken place, what was the next step, and how did your comrades react to you, and where did you go? How did you begin to embark upon this new path?
The Prophet of Islam said, whoever changes his faith, kill him. I don't understand what part of kill Americans don't get. So you lose your family as soon as you begin to express your views. The phone calls began to come from my own father. You should die by shooting. My brother, my family, my land was confiscated back in Bethlehem, so I lost my property. I live in hiding. In fact, when I was an active terrorist in America, you know, they called us freedom fighters. Nobody had a problem with us. We were politically very active in the United States. Once I became active to fight for this country and to fight for my new faith, that's when the trouble began, you know. So the journey took a turn as, you know, your own family now are after you, your threats and things like that. So you lose all your family. You lose every member of your family hates you now. If I go back to my village in Bethlehem, I'll probably be killed and lynched within 5 minutes. Wow. So,
does this continue to this day, sir? Does this continue to this day, these threats and this kind of harassment?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, my family attacks me in the media. They try to make all kinds of lies about me. You know, when I began to become active, many in the media began to doubt my story. They said that I must be a Lebanese phalangist. There is no records for me. I've lived in Palestine. When all this was proven wrong, you know, Waleed was never in prison in Israel. When that was proven wrong, they began to attack everything about my credibility and my story, which people could probably read on my website, shoabot.com, and see my credentials.
Yes,
I have a litany of family members who were involved in terrorism, suicide bombing, and everything else. So this has been...
What do you do now, sir? I know you go to universities to speak, and there's so much of your story that people can... In fact, there's a couple of books that Mr. Shoabot has written, one called Dear Muslim, Let Me Tell You Why I Believed, another called Israel and the World's Mock Trial, where you expose anti-Semitism. I know you've spoken at a lot of universities. What's your reception like, school to school? Does it change? Is it hostile? You know, tell me about that.
It's quite amazing because, you know, you go to universities. In 150 universities across this country, the top universities, there's Muslim student associations which adhere and are apologists for the terror apparatus. So you have to confront this kind of thing. You confront groups like CARE. You know, they're always the Council of American Islamic Relations, Muslim, you know, society kind of groups that always want to confront you at universities. But it's very successful. You know, it cost us tremendous amount of money that we have to put from our own pockets in order to establish these events. But we look at the standing ovations after I finish speaking. It's probably 80%. So in other words, the students were lied to at the universities. You know, they all adhere to all kinds of philosophies. And I think you know the universities in this country. a lot of the money.
Well, Colorado, I know, was Colorado University one of the places where you had a tough time at first? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Colorado wasn't that bad. I mean, Milwaukee was pretty bad. Columbia University was pretty bad. The university didn't allow the people from outside to come and hear us speak, although they allowed Ahmadinejad to speak.
Yeah, it's ironic.
Princeton University didn't allow us to speak. So you have all these hostile professors. You know, in the professors in this country, 7-1, you have 7 liberals to each conservative professor. So, you know, the danger at the university level is that the enemy knows that if it takes one generation and washes their brains to think that basically Islam is a peaceful religion and what have you, this is what Hitler wanted. You know, if you take one generation and brainwash that one generation, you've destroyed that country. And that's why I'm so concentrated at the university. Of course, I go to churches, synagogues. I've spoken to more Jews than Paul himself. I've spoken to millions via the media. And, you know, I have tons of things to include in my messages.
Let me ask you one thing, sir. We saw with our own eyes what happened on September the 11th of 2001. And yet in the years that have followed, in the 7 years since, we have heard even our own citizens raise this argument that, well, America brought it on itself and it's something that we deserve. First of all, I guess the question I'd ask you is, what direction do you think our country is going in since we experienced firsthand this sort of Islamo-fascism? Are we on the right track? Have we lost our soul? Have we lost our courage? What's happening? What do you see happening with America?
Well, when it comes to Islamic terrorism, there is only two choices every American must decide. Whether we can say that terrorism is wrong, or whether we can excuse terrorism. Apparently in the media, predominantly also the university, the education system, they have excused terrorism. Terrorism is caused by poverty. Terrorism is caused by the occupation in Iraq and all kinds of things. If terrorism was caused by poverty, then you have much poverty in India. They don't have terrorism. Hindus don't blow themselves up. However, Pakistanis will go to India and blow themselves up. Palestinians, the occupation in Palestine is the reason for terrorism. That's what most Americans think. That's the mindset today of Americans. However, Christian terrorists in the Palestinian areas, you have a very large terror organization that is a Christian terror organization that is called the PFLP, Popular Front to Liberate Palestine, that was led by George Habash. You never even have a Palestinian Christian terrorist that blows himself up. So connecting this terrorism to occupation or poverty is basically a myth. The Islamic fundamentalist world was basically wounded in 1924 when the West basically dismantled the Ottoman Caliphate in Turkey.
Yes.
And in 1928, you had the birth of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. So 4 years later, the attempt of reviving the Islamic glory in order to establish its tentacles throughout the Middle East and then to the rest of the world began in 1924, way before the occupation in Iraq.
Let me ask if I can hold you over, Mr. Shoaibat. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with you. I'm really, really interested in what you're saying. We're speaking with Waleed Shoaibat, former PLO terrorist who now lectures throughout our country on the evils. Oh, I just hung up on the guy. We're going to have to call him back, bud.
All right.
We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses.
Phil Hendry.
Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work...
Phil Hendry.
I'm speaking with Waleed Shoaibat, a former PLO terrorist who came to a spiritual and political change in his life, is now very outspoken against terrorists. Mr. Shoaibat, I got a question for you, and we only have about 2.5 minutes left. Can you tell me when you were active as a PLO terrorist, as a PLO commando, what did you do? I don't know if you're comfortable speaking about these things, but I think it would be illustrative.
I planted a bomb in a bank that exploded. No one was killed. It was a failed terror operation. Then I was very active in the States. In the early 80s, under the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, my mentor, his name is Jamal Saeed. He was a colleague of Abdullah Azzam, the mentor of Osama bin Laden, who's active in Chicago. It started, you know, in the United States, even in the 80s, the political agenda, because most Westerners think, when they think of terrorism, they think of the Explosive Act, but they don't understand the political and the financial act of supporting terrorism, which is the beginning stage, the educational and the financial, which is what I was involved in the United States of America.
So you were raising money, educating people, recruiting, so on and so forth?
Absolutely. In fact, if you go to my website, shubat.com, at the bottom of the website, you will see the kind of events we were holding. You would see Hamas leaders who would come to give reports to the Muslim community on who they killed, what bus they destroyed. You would see teenagers on the stage dancing with knives in their hand and daggers in their hand. You would see the Quranic recitation. If you meet the unbelievers, then strike off their heads. And all kinds of things, very much in the open, you know. And this is the problem that Americans don't understand, you know. They need to understand the Arabic language. They need to go to these websites and see what the Islamic websites are saying in the Arabic. Just pop the word Islam in Arabic and go to the Arabic websites. Go to the first 100 websites. You'll see every single one of them supports radical Islam. So
and I want let people to know to visit your. I want people to visit your website as well. Shoebat.com is shoebat.com. Sir, I've got to go. It's been fascinating, and that's what everybody's saying listening to this evening. I appreciate it very much, sir, for joining us. Waleed Shoebat, go to his website, check it out. Former PLO terrorist. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show. Back in a few minutes.
Phil Henry.